Order in the court. It's time for Understanding the Law Radio. Well, hi, and welcome back to another episode of Understanding the Law Radio. I'm your host, Peter Lamont. And today we're going to be talking about all things Willy Wonka. Now, I don't know if you are a big Willy Wonka fan or not, but if you like the law, if you have a business, if you're thinking about having a business, whatever the case might be, this episode's going to be for you. We're going to be talking about a few things, all in the context of the Wonkaverse. Now, first, let me just get started by saying that there's only one true Willy Wonka for me, and that's the Gene Wilder version, the film version of Willy Wonka. All these new ones that are coming out, the Johnny Depp one, I couldn't stand, and this new one I haven't seen. Some people say it's good, some people say it's not, but for me, the old school OG Willy Wonka is the way to go. But we're going to be talking today about some things that impact your business, if you're a business owner, and some things if you have thought about ever hosting an event. All right, so you'll remember way back on this show, we talked about the Fyre Festival. So keep that in mind as we move through this episode, because we are going to be talking about the equivalent of the Willy Wonka Fyre Festival. It's going to be good. But first, I want to talk about something that I recently posted, and it's kind of more legal in the sense. It explains through a Willy Wonka scenario the idea of notice and slip and fall negligence. Now, why is this important? Why do you care about this? Well, if you're a small business owner or a big business owner, it doesn't even make a difference. You're going to want to know what constructive notice and contributory negligence mean. You're going to want to understand how that impacts your business. If you don't own a business, you also want to know if you have ever stepped foot in a grocery store, this is going to change your perspective on what sort of a duty the grocery store might have to you. So let's jump in first with the slip and fall analysis and scenario, and then we're going to get to this Wonka Fyre Festival equivalent, which if you haven't heard about, it's going to blow your mind. All right, so let's start with the scenario. I'm going to set it up here. So we've got Willy Wonka, who everybody knows, eccentric, let's say, owner of his famous chocolate factory, and he's going to be opening the doors for a special tour like he often does in the movies. So during the tour, one of his workers, one of the Oompa Loompas, just a hard worker, but the guy just can't seem to get it right. He drops a big block of chocolate on the floor, and because of the temperature in the factory, the chocolate starts to melt. So now you've got melting chocolate on the floor, and the spill goes unaddressed. So they don't clean it up for, let's say, 45 minutes. The chocolate has now created a puddle of chocolate on the floor. And Bob, who is one of the eager participants of this Willy Wonka tour, fails to notice that there's chocolate on the floor. He steps in it, falls, and fractures his hip. Of course, what does Bob do? After Bob picks himself up and licks some of the chocolate off of him, he calls his lawyer and files a lawsuit against Wonka, and he wants damages and compensation for his injuries. Now, in his defense, Wonka, who is going to be representing himself, because I don't think that he could ever get a lawyer, because I don't think he'd listen to anybody. At least the Gene Wilder version would likely not listen to a lawyer. Anyway, he makes two main arguments. First, he says that he's not liable for Bob's injuries because he did not have actual knowledge of the chocolate spill. He says that without being aware of the hazard, he had no duty to address it. So in other words, because he didn't know about the spill, it wasn't him who did it, it was one of the Oompa Loompas, that he doesn't have any ability to address it. He had no duty to address it. Then he argues that Bob was at fault himself for not exercising reasonable care and avoiding the spill. He claims it was open and obvious, and Bob should have seen it, but he didn't. And so Wonka points at Bob's own negligence and tries to shift some of the blame, or all of it if he could, away from himself and on to Bob. All right, now how do we look at this? So first we've got to look at premises liability, because that's what this is. And the concept of premises liability basically says that property owners, like Willy Wonka, have a legal duty to maintain reasonably safe conditions for invitees, essentially visitors, and warn them of any known hazards. So the factory was open for a tour. He invited people in, so everybody's an invitee, and that's what Bob was, and therefore Wonka owed him a duty of care. And that duty of care is, again, to maintain the factory in a reasonably safe condition. Now, we look at two things. We're talking about constructive notice and contributory negligence. Those are essentially the two issues that Wonka was raising in his defenses. So first, let's look at constructive notice. So the key argument in the case really revolves around constructive notice. And of course, Wonka claims he's not liable because he didn't know about the spill. But the law in most states doesn't really care what Willy Wonka actually knew. Basically, the law says that constructive notice can create or establish liability for a property owner. And constructive notice essentially means that if a hazard has existed for a sufficient amount of time, that the property owner should have discovered it through reasonable inspection and maintenance, and therefore can be held liable even without having the actual knowledge of the spill. Now, this is important because the chocolate spill here was on the floor for at least 45 minutes. It had melted, it had created a chocolate puddle. So a court or a jury could look at this, look at the time frame, see that it was long enough for someone to have noticed the spill and to have cleaned it up, and therefore it would have prevented Bob from injuring himself. So that's the whole idea of constructive notice. Now, move on to Wonka's defense of contributory negligence. So he argues that Bob was at fault for not avoiding the spill. He says that, you know, contributory negligence is a concept that says if the plaintiff is negligent, then he's, you know, essentially that negligence contributes to his injuries, that it should either, depending upon the jurisdiction or state that you're in, it should either bar him completely for recovering or be used as an offset. So in other words, if let's say you start off with 100% liability for Wonka and you say that Bob is 60% negligent, well, in some states, because Bob is 60% negligent, his contributory negligence, Wonka might not be responsible for anything. You know, in other states, there's a 51% rule. We're not going to get into the specific of states here because then that'll just bore you to tears. But the point is that contributory negligence or the negligence of the plaintiff can be served to offset. So in this case, I mean, it's possible that Bob could have seen and avoided the spill. So let's get to the verdict here. So if you look at the concepts of premises liability, including constructive notice and comparative negligence, we're going to say that Wonka is going to be held partially responsible for Bob's injuries. The spill was on the floor for 45 minutes. It melted, which suggests that it had, you know, ample time to be identified by a worker or by Wonka himself. Somebody should have discovered it. Somebody should have cleaned it up, but they didn't. Now, again, you're going to look at the contributory negligence. Did Bob have, you know, could he have seen it? Could he have avoided it? Sure. But what's that percentage going to be? I would say that a jury is going to assess maybe 10% or 15 or 20% tops to Bob. So Wonka's still going to be on the hook for the majority of the damages. All right, now let's just put this into the context of a real-world parallel. And remember I talked at the beginning of the show about, you know, people who have shopped at grocery stores. How many times have you been to a grocery store and you've seen something on the floor? You know, clean up on aisle 5, right? Everybody's familiar with that idea. So imagine that you're walking through a section of a grocery store and a customer had spilled water or grapes, because this is another one that's an actual case. Let's say that somebody had knocked some grapes or a banana. Let's go with grapes. Yeah, I'm going to just make a call on this. We're going to go with grapes for this scenario. So somebody has knocked grapes on the floor, and they've turned brown. All right, now what does that suggest to you? It suggests that either they had really bad grapes to begin with, or they had been on the floor long enough that they started to turn brown. So if you're walking and you're going to go pick up, you know, some strawberries, and it's right next to the grapes that are on the floor, you're not looking at the floor, you're looking at the strawberries, you slip and fall on one of these brown rotted grapes and you get injured. It's the same scenario that we talked about for the Wonka case. Because it's, does the store owner or the store itself have constructive notice of this defective condition? Now, the defective condition is, of course, the grape. It's brown, suggesting it's been there for a while, suggesting that nobody has visibly inspected the store and they haven't picked it up. And therefore, under that same Wonka analysis, you know, they could be deemed, the store could be deemed to have constructive notice of the dangerous condition that existed and then be responsible for your injuries. Now, let's take that same scenario and let's say that the grapes on the floor were bright green. Now, the store might have an argument that it just happened and that they routinely inspect the floors of every aisle every 10 minutes. Let's say that that's their business practice. So now they say, look, the grape is green. We inspect the floors every 10 minutes, and the longest it could have possibly been on the floor was 10 minutes or less because we were just down that aisle. So now they might have a stronger case that they did not have constructive notice of the condition and therefore could potentially be off the hook. See how that works? So that's the whole idea here. So if you are a small business owner, right, and you're going to have invitees, people that come in, you're going to be inviting them essentially into your store, you have a duty to make your premises reasonably safe and to perform regular inspections to make sure. So if you're a business owner, what can you do to reduce or limit your risk and exposure to a slip and fall case? So there's a couple things you can do. One, regularly inspect your premises. Look for spills, look for loose flooring or anything that you can find and remedy it, right? Like, let's say it's a loose tile and you can't remedy it at that moment. What do you think you should do? Maybe put something around it, a little warning sign or something. Implement and adhere to consistent cleaning and maintenance schedules. This is important. Remember the example that I talked about with the grocery store? If they can come back and say that they inspect the aisles every 10 minutes and the grape on the floor was green, then there's a much better chance that someone's going to say, well, if you look at their business habits, right, their schedule, the longest it could have been on the floor was 10 minutes, and therefore that's not enough time for constructive notice, and therefore you're not on the hook, right? Good thing. Also, things like, silly things, like adequate lighting, making sure that bulbs are not burned out. If you have walkways or hallways in your premises, whether it's a big office building or a small store, make sure that they're well illuminated. Use signage, proper signage to warn of any hazards. Like I said, if there's a tile that needs to be repaired and you can't do it at that moment, then put a sign up. Block off that area. Also, you should train your employees to be doing the same thing, right? Like, whether you have let's say you're not big enough to have a schedule, or your facility, your space isn't big enough to have something where somebody needs to patrol it every 10 minutes. It's not like a grocery store, right? You should still at least have that discussion with your employees. Hey, look, if there's something amiss, then let me know. If there's something that could potentially be a hazard, let me know. Because if it's a hazard to you, it's also a hazard to the people that you bring in. Your invitees. Also, if you are a larger facility, a larger premises, right, then it's a good idea, obviously, to have that maintenance schedule and to keep records of your inspection. If you go to some of the larger grocery stores or warehouse clubs, oftentimes they'll have somebody that patrols the aisle to look for hazards, and they have a log of it. They keep a log so that they can use that as a business record if they ever get sued. Also, you should really consider installing security cameras. You know, depending again on the size of your office or facility, I mean, you got to use common sense here. If you've got a one-room office somewhere, unlikely that you're going to need to have somebody patrol the area or put security cameras up. But if you've got a larger space, then you would want to have some kind of security cameras, not just for security, quote-unquote security, but to look at, you know, potential risks, somebody that might get hurt, so that you can see how it all happened to protect yourself. And I'm gonna tie that into a story that's kind of funny in a second. It's a real world story. And the final thing, though, before I get into that story, is to make sure that you review your insurance policies. If you don't have insurance and you are inviting people into your premises, you are at risk. You really should have liability insurance, and you know that would cover you in the event of most slip and fall accidents. All right, let's move away from that, and I want to talk to you about this funny story. So we're talking about the idea of having security cameras. So years ago, I was representing a shopping mall. It's a big shopping mall in New Jersey, and the story is like a comedy skit. So this gentleman, he drives into the mall parking lot. He claims he gets out of his car, and just like a Looney Tunes cartoon, he slips and falls on a banana peel, right? What is more cliche than slipping on a banana peel? When I had this case, I was like, I couldn't believe that the guy was actually slipping and falling on a banana peel. It made my mind think back to the cartoons, like where feet are pedaling as they're flipping up in the air on this banana peel. Well, anyway, long story short, the guy tears his meniscus in his knee, and he sues. He sues the mall. So he claims that the banana peel was on the ground for a long time, and that we would have had constructive notice. And so we actually, as the mall, we had a maintenance team that would go around the parking lot and look for anything that was unsafe. They would sweep, clean up, that sort of thing. So we had a log, we had a maintenance schedule, everything that I was telling you about. So what we did have at the time, and this was so many years ago, it was not as commonplace, but we did have security cameras. And interestingly enough, this gentleman goes through the case, despite us producing some of this evidence. And while I'm deposing him, we show him the video. And the video shows him stepping out of his car, putting his hand in his pocket, and then magically, like a David Copperfield trick, on the ground appears a bright yellow banana peel, which he then steps on and falls to the ground. So it turns out, long story short here, A, we had him on film throwing the banana peel down on the ground himself. Doesn't help him, right? Number two, banana peel was bright yellow, indicating that we might not have had constructive notice because it was something that likely just happened. And of course it did, because we saw him do it. And then we also had the maintenance logs and things like that. Turns out that the guy had been injured while he was attending the Evander Holyfield Mike Tyson fight back in whatever year that was, where Tyson bit off Holyfield's ear. And so he was trampled when there was a bit of excitement and people were kind of like running out of the event. He got hurt. That's where he tore his meniscus. But for whatever reason, he didn't make a claim. So he decided he'd go to the mall, throw a banana peel on the ground, and pretend to get injured there so that he could get coverage and sue the mall. Long story short, he got nothing, and it's because of all the proper precautions that the client had taken at the time. So it's a real-life story, and it's a really good learning experience for those of you that have businesses. Now, let's talk about something else that recently happened involving Wonka, And while it didn't happen in this country, it is absolutely something that could, likely will, and you should be aware of. So recently in Glasgow, Scotland, have you heard of the Willy's chocolate experience, the Willy Wonka chocolate experience? If you haven't, you got to look this up. Okay, this is mind-blowing. So this event was inspired, of course, by Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and it promised an immersive family adventure. But when people got there, like, they were promised all kinds of things. They were promised, you know, it was going to be as if you were stepping into this chocolate factory, right? It was supposed to be so immersive. It was supposed to be amazing. But instead, when parents got there, they arrived at a sparse warehouse with nothing but some AI-generated images and a couple actors who had no preparation, who were doing the best that they could. It was absolutely insane. I've seen some clips on YouTube of people who have recorded it when they were there. It was nothing like Willy Wonka. It was not immersive, and they charged people for these tickets. It was so bad that halfway through the event, they had to cancel it and refund everybody. It was the equivalent of the Fyre Festival. If you haven't listened to that episode, the Fyre Festival episode, you really should listen to it. And if you don't know what the Fyre Festival is, you've got to look that up too. It was another one of these mega events that was promised to be an amazing experience that turned out to be horrible. And that is putting it nicely. So you should check that episode out and then look that up as well. I mean, there's actually a documentary, I believe it was on Netflix, about the Fyre Festival. That was insane. But this Willy Wonka experience is in line with the Fyre Festival. The only difference is that they realized that this was going to hell in a handbasket real fast. They pulled the plug, fortunately, and they were able to give people their money back. But this is kind of a warning for a lot of people. It's a learning experience who might be thinking of events. And it's not just people that own businesses. I've seen people that have decided that they're going to have nonprofit events and things like that, and they were going to, you know, make promises and do things. I've seen photographers do it with promises of characters who were going to be at the photo shoot. I've seen businesses do it. I've seen it in multiple contexts. But there's a few things that we can learn from the Wonka fiasco, right? One of them is the importance of proper planning and execution. I mean, that goes without saying, and you would think that it's common sense that if you're going to have something like this, you've got to properly plan and then execute it. But I think sometimes people have these ideas and they think that they can just make it happen, that will all fall into place, but it simply doesn't without adequate planning and then execution. Make sure that if you're going to promise something, that you can actually accomplish what it is that you are promising. You know, don't go so pie in the sky if you have no way of knowing whether or not what you're promising is going to come true. And it seems silly and it seems straightforward and it seems like everybody should know this, but, you know, people don't. People just, I don't know what it is. I think it's like they just believe that it's going to all work out for them, and they make these promises. They don't properly plan, and that's what happens. Willy Wonka, that's what it is. Another thing that you can take away from this is adequate staffing and training. You know, these actors that were at the event, they did their best, but they had no training. They didn't know what they were doing. The scripts they were given were all AI generated. They had no understanding of what it was that they were supposed to be accomplishing. They got paid to go there and you know, do some acting, quote unquote acting, but it wasn't their fault. It really was the lack of training. So if you're going to do something like this on any scale, you've got to have adequate staffing and training. And then another lesson, which I think is important, is prioritizing customer safety and comfort. Now, in the context of what we've talked about in this episode, talking about premises liability and things like that, I mean, obviously, one of the things you've got to be focused on is whether or not your event area is safe, because you're bringing people in, right? They are invitees. You're bringing these people in. They're coming to your space, whatever it might be, a warehouse, an office building, a gym, whatever. So you have a duty of care. So you've got to take that into consideration. And finally, it's clear communication. And that clear communication is with the people that you're selling tickets to or inviting to the event, as well as to your vendors, as well as to your employees or the people that you're hiring to be at these events. You know, keep this in mind. I mean, we're talking about Wonka, but apply this to haunted houses that pop up in the fall, right? I mean, some of these haunted houses, they are run really, really well, like amazing. It's because they do all the things that we just talked about that you should be looking at: planning, execution, training, making sure everything is safe for the guests, that sort of thing. So, you know, that's a real good example, because imagine what happens to those haunted houses, and this is just one of the best examples I can think of, where they don't do their due diligence, right? They don't make sure everything is safe. You're you know, really opening yourself up to significant liability by not exercising reasonable care, by not doing the things that we talked about. So, you know, if you're going to be running an event, make sure that you think about this in a different way. Don't be like the organizers of the Willy Wonka experience, because they wasted their time, they wasted their money, and all it did was really frustrate and disappoint the people that showed up there with kids expecting to see what they were promised, you know, being an immersive Wonka environment, which, of course, it was not. All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode. Hopefully, you learned a little something, had a little bit of fun. We talked about constructive notice today and its place in slip and fall accidents, and it's just good for you, whether you own a business or not, to have some understanding of that concept. I shared with you my story of the banana peel thrower who injured himself at the Holyfield and Tyson fight. And then finally, we talked about the idea of, you know, the Wonka experience failure and compared it to the Fyre Festival. And then we looked at the things that you can do if you're going to be running one of these events to make sure that you don't end up in the same boat on that chocolate river that Wonka went down. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks for joining me, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Understanding the Law Radio. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you subscribe to the podcast. We're available anywhere that you listen to your podcasts, including Amazon, Apple Music, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and many more. Also, don't forget to check us out online on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks again. See you next time.